You're listening to the OneOfUs.net podcast network. OneOfUs.net and all of the shows on it are 100% subscriber supported. Please consider becoming a subscriber to OneOfUs.net. Keep the site and all of our great shows going and get some terrific bonus content as well.
As the final thoughts came to a close, the host signed off with an unusual warning. Don't turn around. Those who heeded the call lived to see another day. Those who didn't soon realized it would be the last podcast they ever heard.
Very nice.
So I'm Bradley Martin here, talking about Scary Stories, a documentary about scary stories. And with me I have...
Frank Calvillo. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you, sir?
I'm good. The scary stories kept me up late at night.
Yeah, same here. Haven't slept a wink. Now, this is the first documentary I've reviewed based on a book, at least that I'm aware of. How about you?
Yeah, same here. I mean, usually the books, and films, I usually think it's just, you know, straight up like narrative features. But, but this one was a special one, I gotta say. What do you think?
No, I agree. I read all these books. There's three volumes of Scary Stories by Alvin Schultz.
Schwartz.
Is that how you pronounce it? Schwartz? Oh.
Yeah. Nah, Schultz is the Peanuts guy, I think.
No, right? Yeah, you're right. Yeah, Schwartz. Thank you. And, you know, I fortunately was able to avoid a lot of the controversy this documentary presents about these books. My parents were pretty cool with me reading it all.
That's pretty awesome, actually. I'm the son of a librarian. So my mom was like, read whatever the fuck you want. which is really pretty awesome. But my mom was also one of those librarians who had to be like, you know, when a book was challenged, she had to go home and quickly read it over the weekend and whatnot. And I think I remember as a kid when these books were challenged. It's a thing. I come from a small town in Texas, so, you know, we're things were challenged all the time. And I can, you know, it's pretty obvious to see like why these books are challenged. But hey, you know.
Sure. I mean, you have Stephen Gammell, am I saying that name right?
Yeah.
His artwork is pretty disturbing, which, you know, to the credit of the stories in this, is very eye-catching. I think.
Yeah. Oh my. Oh, go for it. Sorry.
Yeah. Well, when you bring up the Scary Stories series, the three volumes, I think anybody who's ever read them or even heard about them, as the documentary gets into, thinks about the artwork first.
And it's hard not to, though, isn't it? I mean, they leave such an impression, and also, I mean, you know, I remember thinking as a kid, I was less scared of them than just, you know, just in awe of like how beautiful they were. I mean, these are really like gorgeous like drawings when you get right down to it.
Oh, sure. And I think that's, you know, hearing about them making a live action film, probably based mostly on this artwork and the highlights from the three books in the series, and seeing when these books were first written, I was shocked, like, what took them so long? Everything's here to really scare the hell out of people.
Yeah, pretty much. And I think it's, and I don't know, for me, it's always been a question. I don't know if you've ever wondered about it. Which was scarier, the illustrations or the stories? Or, you know, because for me, it was something that was always like tougher to discern, because there's no question I was scared. I, you know, have like really vivid memories just reading them, like you know, with just like a lamp on in like a dark room at night, and you know, just couldn't tell. But you'd be hard pressed to find a better, in the history of children's literature, a better marriage between author and illustrator than I think Scary Stories.
Oh, absolutely. And getting back to the documentary, I was very disappointed that the son of Schwartz here and his estranged wife and family. Alvin has sadly passed away when they started making this from cancer, but they got into the author and his artwork, and I'm like, wow, I'm excited to hear what he has to say. And then they quickly said, Stephen Gamel, the artist, does not give interviews.
So that was I could sort of see that, you know. So,
well, I was disappointed when they said that.
I was too. we have Alvin Fortz's son reading an excerpt from the lone interview he did give, which was which, you know, his words were really interesting. Which he probably would make somewhat of an interesting interviewee.
You know, it's funny. Stephen King, who of course everyone knows is the master of horror. Now he's got his wife that he's been married to for decades, I believe, who also is his editor and his love, his muse. So I was thinking that from Alvin we'd hear about his great family upbringing too, because a lot of horror novelists, they tend to have the opposite of, you know, the source material they write.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. No, without question. I think I remember, even though it's film instead of literature, I remember Neve Campbell talking about how Wes Craven loves, when he was alive, his favorite thing was just like, you know, at night curl up with like a cup of tea and read like, you know, classic literature by the fire. I think we always have this image in our minds of these masters of horror, whether it be literature or film, to be just, you know, these dark, tortured souls when they're really so jovial and normal.
Yeah, and speaking of, like, this series in particular, like Guillermo del Toro, who's going to be producing the live action, I still wouldn't be surprised if it came out he, like, slept in a graveyard. Just based on how he is as a person, I think it would come across as quite charming, you know, and not as scary and horrifying. Anyways, back to this documentary. As you said, they interviewed his son and his wife, a lot of people who are fans of the books. It seemed to me, though I liked hearing about what people have to say about this, since I'm a huge fan, they could have went down the street and, you know, interviewed random passerby about it, and that, you know, any random passerby who would have the opportunity to be like, oh yeah, I love those books. But a lot of the interviews did seem very random in that sense, don't you think? Or
well, a bit. I mean, I the reason I liked seeing those specific interviews was just to see how how deep the series like permeated, and for generations. I think because I don't know, how old are you, Riley? Out of curiosity.
Oh, I'm an old man. Yeah, 35. You know, pushing 35 this year.
Well, all right. Well, I'm 37 as of January. So, I think so. Are we like one of the first generations to have these books?
You know, quite possibly. And as you said, and what the documentary really dives into, which is another topic I find very interesting, is the book banning, the book challenges, the librarians sticking up for it, the principals beholden to the PTA. I found that really interesting. As I said, it didn't affect my life, but go on. What did you think about that section of the documentary, since it's the majority of
the film? Well, I'm split because, I do see, I would understand, like, how concerning this would be, you know, if, you know, a young child brought this home and, you know, just on the surface, it does look like, you know, I imagine you would question if this was, like, age appropriate. And they do, I love that the documentary has one of the series' most notorious challengers on camera in present day. Talking about why she felt these books were not appropriate for her children. At the same time, though, my mother was on had to hear a lot of challenges toward books and everything from scary stories. I remember she said that Judy Blume book about the girl getting her period for the first time.
Oh, sure. Hey God, it's me, Mary, or something. I apologize, missing the title, I'm sure, but
Margaret. Something like that. I remember being in college when, like, the first time one of the Harry Potter books was challenged. And, I know, right? And so, It's exhausting, and there's really, you know, you really feel for both sides in the sense, because there is a genuine concern there, but at the same time, it's more often the case of one side seeing something that the other side doesn't.
Sure.
And you can't really. It's a side with no, like, for lack of a better term, villains. And so there's really, you know, you really can't, I really couldn't hate the people who are making the argument against the books, because it wasn't coming from a place of, you know, malice, where they were seeking out, you know, seeking out those books to hate, but at the same time, they were, I mean, censorship just drives me crazy, and especially when you think of the original intent of those stories. Which is something that I think is part of the documentary I really, really liked. Is, you know, it took the time to actually delve into why, or you know, the inspiration behind Schwartz's choosing those stories and the way he presented those stories, which I thought was really cool.
No, I agree 100%. And I thought the documentary might have been a little bit too respectful of everybody's point of view. Though deep down, I think maybe more documentaries could take that route.
Yeah.
You know, this person's presented as, and here she comes, the most popular woman in the case of banning all these books.
All right.
She's, you know, this cheery lady who's, you know, like, hello. Right away,
and
I was like, well, I don't hate her. She's a cheerful young, you know, and then later old lady, because. Because they showed her as at the time.
That's what time does.
Yeah.
But yeah, and you think when you hear someone challenging books, you think, oh my God, I want to hate this person. But she says, like, look, this is just the way I felt, and this is the way I saw it, and, you know, yada yada yada. But I do love, to the doc's credit, you know, her and Schwartz's son sit down for like a talk, and, you know, it's basically two sides, you know, hearing each other out. And it's very pleasant, and they both make their points, I think, fairly well. You know, and I like that. You know,
yeah.
You got to admire any documentary that truly decides not to take one side versus the other over the other. You know,
oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
It reminds me of the Mad Epidemic. You know, mothers angry against alcohol drivers. I forget the acronym. But kind of like that, this woman, you know, went to the library and said, I don't want my children, you know, my child to get this book. And, you know, other children shouldn't read this either. Mm-hmm. And then overnight, all of a sudden, she's like, oh, crap, I'm a local news person now. I'm in the local news. And then all of a sudden that spread
to
state
news. Show. Okay.
And then international news. And they never really dive into, from what I've seen, that sudden progression. And of course, nowadays that can happen within seconds, you know, not weeks. So she definitely didn't want that attention that was just kind of thrust upon her, because she didn't like a scary story. So I thought that was a pretty interesting aspect to see that point of view. And, you know, she clearly was just a mild-mannered woman who was doing her best to raise her kids, and then all of a sudden was thrust into an international spotlight. So I agree with you. I like how both sides of the coin were, you know, shown and how these book bannings go.
The book banning thing, that segment, even though it strayed from, you know, the actual narrative of the doc, I thought it was interesting to show that, and to show how a lot of the parents, I think, a lot of parents don't fully read, or, you know, read the entire text of whatever book they're challenging. They just hear like a log line or something, or read the first few pages and decide, I'm gonna challenge this. But I think it's interesting to see that those parents are driven, whether they've read the book in its entirety or not, are usually driven by fear.
Yes.
And I feel that is there, that they carry that with them, even, you know, if they read it cover to cover, it is still it's still something that's there, and they carry that with them all the way to the hearing, and it's really just the fear that's governing them rather than a need to or desire to make, you know, keep the world as pure and innocent as possible for their kids.
A pure and innocent
pure
place.
Yeah, in their kids' eyes, anyways, as far as their kids
will
know.
With rainbows and
no scary stories, come on.
Well, between you and me, you don't get rainbows without a storm, so I don't really like when people say with rainbows when they talk about a pure world.
Yeah.
Because then your child has to go through the storm, and who wants that?
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
I'm kidding.
Storm is part of life.
Speaking
of someone who raging. we had a flash flood warning yesterday, so yeah, they do exist.
Oh man,
I know, it was fun times. We were like watching like the rain come down like waves, like a wave pattern.
Oh,
it was
yeah.
just like to the side. It was like fun times. Anyway,
I love the rain. Well, yeah. Why don't we head into our final thoughts?
Well, okay, I gotta say I would like more of an exploration. Into the stories, I think the sort of ideology behind them and how they're driven by folklore and the culture of the day was a really great aspect of the documentary. How Schwartz drew on topics such as, you know, not understanding, a fear of not understanding the way your body works, a fear of, you know, foreigners, a fear of, you know, just the society around you, and how that is the scariest thing of all. How real life is the scariest thing of all, and how he took that sort of ideology and mixed it with, you know, these tales of folklore and created these, you know, stories which still stay with me. You know, every story they cite, individual story they cited in this documentary. I recalled, I was like, oh yeah, that one. Oh, and that one too. Yeah, I remember that one. And, you know, and that's the mark of, you know, a great storyteller. And I also loved seeing how his works, you know, found their way into you know, inspired different artists today. Like, you know, there's you see that one gentleman who like does sculptures and. That are based on the scary stories and travels with them like from gallery to gallery. I think that's what he does. I thought that was very interesting. You know, there's so much here between the controversy, the biography of Schwartz himself, his family life, which itself was, I think, was very much worth commenting on, and the inspiration behind the stories. I really wish I would like to. That this would have been a longer documentary. I think there was enough room to explore, to go into different areas more. But on the whole, this is exactly the exploration, the kind of exploration into this, you know, iconic series that I was hoping for. I've been following this Twitter account for a year, waiting for this documentary to come out, and I wasn't disappointed. I gotta say, I like it, and I'm sad that the series as a whole now, the original series, is going for so much money, you know, secondhand. Yeah. And I'm glad that my mom kept my now ratty original 3 copies, like everything else from my childhood, stored away. I liked it. I gotta say I liked it. It was a great tribute to an iconic series which formed my childhood in a lot of ways, especially as a, you know, for the avid reader and horror nut that I am today. So yeah, I like it. I thought it was great. I gotta give this 10 out of 10 Scary Stories action figures, which do exist, but I can't find. Damn it.
I had no idea about those.
Yeah, they are. They're like Gumby size, you know, they're not like.
No, I hear you.
Actually huge. Yeah.
That's cool.
Yep.
Well, I'm echoing a lot of your sentiments. I was disappointed. I didn't know a lot about the author and the artist, and the documentary saying, yeah, he's passed away and he will not interview. I was, you know, right away thinking, aw.
I know.
I do like the quickness of the documentary and how it is a loving tribute. Out of the 3 volumes, I was kind of upset they didn't get to delve into every single story. My favorite was to read to my kids. And, you know, bad parent alert, everybody. I do read these to my kids when they turn like 4 and 5. And my favorite is Where's My Big Toe? or it might just be called The Big Toe.
It's called The Big Toe. Yeah, that's right.
So, as I'm sure our listeners know, I have 7 kids right now.
Oh, wow.
And as soon as, you know, one of them might feel many. Is, yeah, well, that's why I feel like I'm an old man. they just drain the years off your life. Anyways, as soon as I feel they're of age, I read Where's My Big Toe? And how that story goes is a kid finds a toe in the yard. Sometimes he eats it, sometimes he doesn't. It depends on how you're feeling when you read the story. And there's actually directions like that in the book. Very cool. At the end, you know, something's creeping in the house and creeping up the stairs and creeping into the room, you know, kind of wailing, where's my big toe? Mm-hmm. And when it finally gets into the room, the book instructs you to grab one of the people sitting around you and scream, you have it! So every time, you know, and my oldest knows the shtick, so he's always excited for it. When I'm first reading scary stories for the first time to my new littlest younger one, little baby boy or baby girl, I grab him and scream, you have it! And their reaction from it is either a home run or this child will never want to hear a scary story again.
It's the acid test.
So yeah, I lucked out. Every single one of my kids after that experience has been, can we read more scary stories?
Yeah, that's a good gateway story into
the... Yeah, yeah. Absolutely. Really. So in closing, I think... the fandom that they interview, even through the controversies that the documentary covers, when they focus a lot on the fandom, it's a lot like that moment for me reading that story for the first time to one of my children. And it really hits it out of the park in that sense. And I'm glad that this documentary also was produced to just bring more awareness to these fun, kind of spooky and...
Yeah, it's a loving tribute.
Scary stories, it really is. So I'm going to give this 8 wailing ghosts in a haunted house on 10th Street. Ooh.
Nice.
And I mean, we're a bit away from Halloween, but you got your costume planned?
I'm not going to be doing anything scary, but I am going to be Gideon Graves from Scott Pilgrim.
Oh, yeah. Another underrated book series. I'd love to see a documentary on
and that. And an underrated movie still, in my opinion. It should have been a Valentine's Day release. It should not have had to compete with Julia Roberts and Sylvester Stallone on August weekend. Absolutely. Sorry.
Yeah, and just closing off there, Davey Peppers, I believe, one of our screener squatters.
Yes.
That's like his favorite movie.
Oh, really? I didn't know that. So, cool.
Excellent costume idea. Our listeners, you know.
Don't steal it. No, actually,
don't steal it. Yeah.
We won't be at the same party. It's fine.
But thanks for listening, and don't turn around.